At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
You're listening to another episode of Lords of Limited with your hosts Ben Wernie and Ethan Sachs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. We've got our Rivals of Ixalan pre-release crash course for you this week. My name is Ben Wernie, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs, back from his dinner club. Ethan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I feel very well fed. I've been in a car all day, and I am so pumped to talk about this set with you. We've been pretty cagey about talking too much over texts or Twitch or whatever, so I'm really excited to get your full thoughts in my ears this week.
Yes, the foreplay has been building, and now we get to actually do it.
Yeah, for sure. So we would normally have a lot of nice little talk about how our weeks were, but there's no time for any of those shenanigans. There's no time for Vintage Cube trophy updates. There is time, however, to talk about our Patreon page. That's right, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, where you can give back to the show if you so choose. We have some sweet perks. This week, especially, those perks are going to be extra sweet for the people who get copies of our show notes, because we have a lot of information about this set for the folks at home who want that copy of the show notes. So we have a couple new patrons this week that we want to shout out. Welcome to the fray, Joel, Joshua, and Axel. Thank you so, so much for your support of the show. It means the world to us.
Yes, absolutely. Cannot say thank you enough.
Okay, so we're going to do things a little differently this week. We are not, that's right, I repeat, we are not doing a card-by-card set review. We wanted to take a different approach to the spoilers this week, and I want Ben to maybe guide us through how this episode's going to go.
Yeah, we're going to do things a little differently than normal, as you said. First thing we're going to do is just take a look at stats. As many different statistics as possible for the format that we can throw at you to help you and us get a picture of what the format's going to look like. Because I think we missed the mark pretty hard on Ixalan, partially because we didn't understand how the removal matched up with the creatures. And I think if we'd taken a look at these kinds of stats, we might have been able to get a better sense of how the format was going to play out. So we're going to jam stats down and then kind of try to draw some conclusions about the format from what those stats, you know, lead us to believe about the format. And then for each color, we're going to go through our biggest, we've already done grades in a spreadsheet for all of these cards. And we're going to highlight the cards where our grades are different by more than 2 marks. If I had a C- and Ethan had a C+, we're going to take a look at that card. And if you're just interested in our grades in general, we'll have a link to the spreadsheet available for you. And then after we go through those differences for each color, we're going to take a look at the top commons and top uncommons for each color. So for white, we'll do the grading differences, then top commons, then top uncommons, and so on and so forth for all the other colors.
So I think the first thing to do is, if you're unfamiliar with the grading scale we're using, we are going to be using the same scale, I think generally used across the board, but I think started by Limited Resources. So this is the A through F grading scale. So an A, not going to be found in the commons and uncommons most often, but that's going to be bombs, game winners, cards that are good in many situations, especially when behind. These are often the best cards in the set. The bomb rares, hyper-efficient removal spells. So we think back to Ixalan, Hostage Taker, Vraska Relic Seeker, Whatley Warrior Poet, Registrar Alpha, Charging Monstrosaur even. Those are going to be the bombs of that format.
Yeah, and then Bs are going to be strong cards that pull you into a color and make you want to play that color. Reasons to be in a particular color or combination of colors. Some of the very best commons in the set and very good uncommons. So some examples of that from Ixalan, Odonto Vanguard, Siren Storm Tamer, Wanted Scoundrels, and Drover of the Mighty.
Cs are going to be solid playables. These are like the meat and potatoes of a limited deck, very interchangeable. These are your average creatures, normal, overcosted removal spells, Paladin of the Bloodstained, Siren Lookout, Headstrong Brute, Tishana's Wayfinder, that sort of thing.
Ds are your sometimes playable cards, your below average card, 22nd, 23rd type cards in your deck. Some examples of this, Crash the Ramparts, Nest Robber, Costly Plunder, and Headwater Sentries.
Fs, these are unplayables, cards you should never put in your deck at any circumstance, weird rares, constructed cards, like Ashes of the Abhorrent or Arcane Adaptation.
And then we've got a couple of niche grades here. Sideboard cards, cards that don't make the main deck, but when you board them in can be quite good. Some examples of that, Slice and Twain, Demystify, Spell Pierce, and Duress.
And we'll also look at cards in a sort of build-around capacity, cards that don't do much on their own, but when built around can be good to maybe even great. So like Wild Growth Walker or Lurking Chupacabra as explore payoffs from the last set, or Favorable Winds as a payoff for a bunch of flyers.
All right. That's the grading scale. Let's dive into those stats, baby.
Yeah. Okay, so the first thing we want to look at in terms of stats are the creature power and toughness. So we sort of just went pretty mathy here. And we should say that all the cards that we're looking at this week are only the commons and uncommons. So especially because it's a small set, the rares and mythics aren't going to come up a ton. So we really just want to be, as limited players for draft and sealed, you're going to be dealing with commons and uncommons like 95% of the time. So that these are the stats that are going to matter. So we looked at the average, median, mode, and range of power and toughness for creatures. So for common creatures in the set, the average power toughness was 2.29 for power and 2.39 for toughness. The median power toughness was 2.2. The mode power toughness was 2.2. And the range for power was 0 to 6, and the range for toughness was 1 to 6.
Yeah, and as far as the uncommons go, same power and toughness stats, the average power for uncommons was 2.43, the average toughness, 2.65. The median and the mode, again, are 2.2 for the uncommons, same as the commons. And the range of the power is from 1 to 4, and the range of the toughness is from 1 to 5.
So just to give you an idea about how prevalent the 2.2s are, 41 of 83 creatures have power 2, 32 of 83 creatures have toughness 2, and 47 of 83 creatures have toughness 2 or less. So about half the creatures are 2.2s or 2.1s, basically, or like 1.1s, but like a 2.2 or smaller. Why is that relevant? This is like a format of bears right here.
Yeah, not even like, you know, Ixalan, Semulin always wanted to call a format of hill giants. Well, this is like a format of bears and goblin pikers. Is that the 2 and a half?
Yeah, goblin
piker,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So super low power level, it looks like, as far as power and toughness driven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very flat. So, I mean, it harkens back. This makes me feel like it's the same as Ixalan. Like, a lot of my thoughts about this, as we will get through today, is that, like, this just seems like an extension of Ixalan and not like it's really going to shake things up maybe the way Hour of Devastation did for Triple Amonkhet. This looks like we've got a lot of flat power level among creatures from any cost. So I think that's going to... The thing that a big takeaway from these first stats for me is like, well, if this is an average set of 2-2s, then a 2-mana 2-2 is going to be better than like a 3-mana 2-2. Or anything that's like efficiently costed, like a 3-mana 3-3 or a 4-mana 4-4, if those exist, those sort of like pop out to me as well as cards that are above rate.
As well as like maybe a 1-mana 2-1. Because if you can drop that thing on turn 1, like it's going to be trading with your opponent's 2-drop.
Yeah, or their 3-drop. And it allows you to double spell as well, right? You can like on turn 4 drop a bear and a 2-1 for 1-mana or something like that.
Yeah. And then taking a look at the... So we just looked at the creature's power and toughness. Moving on to converted mana cost stats. The average converted mana cost for a creature is 3.08. So on average, you're casting a Goblin Piker, a 3-mana 2-2. Which is, I mean, granted, they're probably going to have some abilities, but that is not great.
Yeah, that's not great.
And the median converted mana cost is 3. The mode converted mana cost, 2, 3, and 4 converted mana cost were all tied at 22 creatures. So there are 22 creatures with cost 2, 22 that cost 3, and 22 that cost 4. And the range of converted mana cost is from 1 to 6. And there's almost no 5 and 6 drops. 6 is like a Colossal Dreadmaw, and there may be like a couple 5 drops.
Okay, so how does that match up to the removal in the format, right? So we often talk about like how you're trading up or down in terms of tempo or investment in mana when you cast removal spell on a creature. The removal in Ixalan was super clunky, right, because it matched up poorly with all the small creatures in the format. So in Rivals, the average CMC of removal at common and uncommon level is 2.85. We can compare that to Triple Ixalan, where the average CMC was 3.7-ish, almost a full mana more expensive than it is now. So as you'll see, the removal did notch down a bit. Like, we'll look at stuff, but, you know, we had Pious Interdiction for 4 mana. Now we have a Pacifism effect for 3 mana. We had Contract Killing, which was just a straight-up kill spell for 5 mana. Now Black has a straight-up kill spell for 4 mana. We had Unfriendly Fire that dealt 4 damage, and now we have, I think it's called Bombard, that deals 4 damage for just 3 mana. So everything feels like it got notched down a little bit. So what does that tell you about how removal is going to match up in this format?
You're going to be getting a very slight mana advantage on removal versus creatures in general based on the average converted mana costs. However, the creatures just don't seem very powerful to me. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really interesting to see how good removal is in the format. Like, it's obviously better than it was in Ixalan, which does give me some hope. You know, you were saying this seems a lot like Ixalan to you.
Yeah.
The fact that the removal is a whole mana cheaper on average does give me hope that maybe control decks will exist and that you will be able to play a more traditional style control deck with removal and one for ones, trying to get card advantage with card draw. We'll have to see how that shakes out, though.
Yeah, for sure. So we also wanted to take a dive at some things that are, I don't know, niches of the format. And one of those that came up a lot when I was looking through the set review was life gain. There's a lot of cards that seem to care about gaining life, and I wanted to see how much life gain there was in the format and where it was, because that was also a pretty big clue. One of our biggest takeaways when we did our like wrap up of Hour of Devastation was like, felt like a lot of incidental life gain existed in that format. And that was one of the reasons that the format slowed down a bit, you know?
Right. Because there were great aggro decks in Hour of Devastation. There was mm-hmm. just life gain and good control cards to combat them.
Exactly. So in Rivals of Ixalan, there are only 7 ways to gain life at the common and uncommon level, and that's including things that have life gain or just things that have life link and things that just have incidental life gain. So to just give an overview of what those 7 cards look like, they basically are only in white-black. There's 4 white, 3 black spells, and it's all basically gaining 2 life. Maybe you've got like a 2/2 lifelinker here. A lot of spells have just like gain 2 life tacked onto them. And they're all fairly good. They seem like they're mostly on the playable side, the C or higher grade side. But I think it's not a ton of life gain.
Yeah, so that sounds good for the life gain cards. Moving on to mana sinks. There are almost no mana sinks in the format, and they are all like pretty not good, I think. The first of them is a blue card. It's an uncommon called Aquatic Incursion. Costs 3 and a blue for an enchantment. It says when Aquatic Incursion enters the battlefield, create 2/1/1 blue merfolk creature tokens with hexproof. And then it's got the activated ability of 3 and a blue, target merfolk can't be blocked this turn. That's a tricky one to evaluate. That's one we're going to discuss later in our differences because we were a little different on this card. I think it's probably the best of them, but still not insane. There's a red card, Sun-Collared Raptor, costs 1 and a red for a 1/2 dinosaur with trample, and it's got the activated ability 2 and a red. Sun-Collared Raptor gets +3/+0 until end of turn. Not what I want my 2-drop to be doing and or what I want my mana sink to be. So that one's really not great in my opinion. And then the black-green gold uncommon called Jungle Creeper is 1 black-green for a 3/3 elemental and has the activated ability 3 black-green, return Jungle Creeper from your graveyard to your hand. So like a good value card, but not insane.
Yeah, it's like a cute explore card. Like you can explore it to the graveyard and then buy it back later, I feel like is what it's trying to do in black-green. But like, if you think back to, we had great mana sinks at uncommon for the Dirtle decks with Shapers of Nature and Thundering Spineback from the last set. And yeah, we'll still have a pack of that, but this makes me a lot less excited about like messing around with multicolor control decks or drafting my boy Sailor of Means again. I just don't think there's a lot here without opening or getting past some busted rares for the control decks to have incentives, you know?
Yeah, makes sense to me.
So we do have a couple, like, quote-unquote wraths or mini-sweepers at common and uncommon. There's two in a red for Shake the Foundations, which deals one damage to each creature without flying, and has the very important text draw card on it. This hits 15 creatures in the set out of 83 total. So not a ton, but it is not blank, so I think this isn't, like, the worst card in the world, but is certainly not very exciting. And there's a much more exciting card. This is one black-black for Golden Demise. All creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn, or if you have the City's Blessing, which we'll get to in a second what that is, only opponent's creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. So this hits over half the creatures in the set. It hits 47 of 83 commons and uncommons in the set. So that's going to be a really effective sweeper, I think, in this format, and a pretty high pick for black.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a super high pick, and it gives me hope that there are going to be control decks in the format. Like, the fact that this is an uncommon. Like, do you remember back in Amonkhet format, the Rags to Riches, how good that was at rare? Like, -2/-2 to the team?
Yeah, for sure.
It feels like that's going to be similar power level here, if not even better, and might be good enough at uncommon to spawn a control deck on its own.
Yeah, absolutely. So, do you want to just go over quickly what Ascend is? We just talked about City's Blessing.
Yeah, so we've got a new mechanic called Ascend. It's the only new mechanic for the set. Ascend says, if you control 10 or more permanents, you get the City's Blessing for the rest of the game. And just a couple important things to note about that. Instants and sorceries with Ascend are going to check upon resolution, whether or not you've got 10 permanents. And then once you receive the City's Blessing once, you have it for the rest of the game. So if you ever cast an instant or a sorcery with Ascend and you've got 10 permanents in play, you get the City's Blessing, boom, you've got it for the rest of the game. If you ever have a creature with Ascend and have 10 permanents out, boom, you've got the City's Blessing for the rest of the game. Even if you drop below 10 permanents. So once you've got the City's Blessing, if for some reason, you know, we're in Vintage Cube here, so that's where my brain goes. Mm-hmm. If you get balanced down to no permanents, you've still got the City's Blessing. And then, so what the City's Blessing is it's just like a thing that grants bonuses to your cards with Ascend. So there's going to be like a lot of creatures with Ascend that get minor bonuses once you've got the City's Blessing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So 10 permanents is the key mark that you want to get there.
Yeah. So how prevalent is this? Well, it's a new mechanic. They are pushing it kind of hard. There are 14 total cards at common and uncommon that have Ascend. 3 in blue that are all payoffs for the late game. 3 in white that are all semi-aggressive cards. 3 in black, again, all payoffs for the late game. 1 in red, aggressive. None in green. There are 2 gold cards, 2 of the uncommons, the blue-white and the blue-black one. These are great late-game payoffs. And there's one artifact that sort of has a pretty meh payoff for having the City's Blessing. So it's primarily concentrated in the Esper Shard, right? So we have 3 blue, 3 white, 3 black. It's also present in the blue-white and the blue-black uncommon. So those best payoffs, I think, are going to be in blue and black, which is pretty good because I think a lot of the times you're going to be getting Ascend is with treasure tokens. I think that's most likely where you're going to get it. But these are all pretty minor payoffs. I don't know how excited you are about Ascend, Ben.
I'm fairly excited about it in a blue-black deck. It does look like there are some very real payoffs to me in blue and black for Ascend. Mm-hmm. And it looks like those colors want to be controlling anyway, and those are the colors that have treasure. And I think unless you're doing it with treasure, you're probably not going to be getting Ascend very reliably unless you're in a game where the board stalls out.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be like trivially easy to do. I think it's going to happen like randomly in games that stall out. And other than that, it's not going to happen unless you put work towards making it happen with like treasure and stuff.
Right. I also think that white and black, but white was really where you were making a lot of tokens, a lot of vampire tokens. White's not really doing that anymore. There's one common. There's a 2-mana 2/1 that when it dies, it makes a 1/1 token. But other than that, there's not really a lot of token making happening. So I think it's more going to be treasure based. And if anything, like there is some token making in the merfolk side of things that we'll get to. But I don't really think it's happening for vampires, at least in the rivals packs.
Yeah. And then we've got some returning mechanics just to like take a look at to kind of show you how prevalent they are or not prevalent they are. So the first one we're going to take a look at is Enrage. There's 5 cards total in the set with Enrage. 1 white card. It's a 5-mana 3/5 with an Enrage trigger of gain 2 life. two red enrage triggers. One is on an uncommon that's pretty good. Three and a red for a 2/2 that has an enrage trigger of deal 5 to target creature and opponent controls. I think that's like the only real payoff for enrage.
Yeah.
And then there's another common that like has an enrage trigger of deal 2 to an opponent, deal 2 damage to an opponent. And then there's two green enrage cards. One of them makes a sapperling upon enraging, like a 1/1 sapperling token, and another one untaps a permanent upon being enraged. So none of those are really like major effects except the deal 5 to a creature. So I do think that card is going to be good and worth building around and something to keep your eye out for.
Yeah, for sure. Raid is not as present as we might have thought. So there's only three cards with Raid in total. There's two blue ones. There's three and a blue for the 3/2 Raid Mana War effect, the 3/2 that bounces a creature when it comes into play if you attack to the creature. And there's a three and a blue for a 3/2 flyer that's reduced by one colorless mana if you attacked with a creature this turn. Both of those are very, very strong, I think. And then there's one red mana for a 2 and a red for a 2/2 that gets a +1/+1 counter that makes it a 3/3 if you attack with a creature. So again, we were looking back at the power toughness stats. This, if you attack with a creature, this is going to be a 3-mana 3/3, which is pretty good right now, at least looking at base power toughness stats. So all three of the raid effects in this format seem good to me, but it's just, it's not really that prevalent. So you're really going to be getting those raid payoffs a lot more in the last pack.
Yeah, and then Explore is almost non-existent.
So sad.
It is so sad, because that essentially means that Wild Growth Walker and Lurking Chupacabra out of the Ixalan pack are pretty dead.
Yeah.
Unless you just get insanely lucky. So there's one card, it's green, costs a single green, it says, it's called Enter the Unknown, it's a sorcery, and it says, target creature you control explores, you may play an additional land this turn. This is a super, super interesting card. We were texting about this one because I was just saying it was tough to grade, because when your creature hits a land, it's insanely powerful, right? It's a single mana that cantrips, draws you a land. So essentially the card is, when you hit a land off exploring, it's like a Mox that costs one.
It's free.
Which is good.
Yeah.
But when you brick and you don't hit a land, you're spending a card to like give a creature +1/+1 and like maybe play an extra land, and it's card disadvantage. So unless your deck's like really interested in a +1/+1 counter on a creature, which I think most decks aren't, like, this card's dangerous.
Yeah, I think it's probably not going to get played that much, but I don't think it's actually that bad. And I don't know if there's any like top of the library manipulation. I didn't really like think about it when thinking about this card, but that's probably too much setup anyway for just like a one mana, maybe it draws you a land thing. But I feel like this is not, so when it hits, so what if it was just like one mana, you play an extra land this turn and like draw land. What is that, a B+?
That's great, yeah.
It's great, right? And when it bricks, it's like a D-.
Yeah, something like that, a D, yeah.
Yeah, so like, I mean, it's kind of risky, but I feel like that can all average out to be like a C- or something. It's not atrocious, but anyway, there's just not, if that's your only explore thing at common or uncommon, it's just, it's not in the cards in this format. And then we've got some treasures floating around. Six total cards. My boy Sailor of Means is back. These are all in the Grixis shard again. So two blue cards, two red cards, one black, and one artifact. This is a Gleaming Barrier. It's two mana for an 0/4 that when it dies, it makes a treasure. So that sort of like makes me feel a little tiny twinge of hope that Dirtle could be a real deck in this format, like a colorless 0/4.
That card's great, right? Wall of Forgotten Pharaohs did that for Hour of Devastation, I think.
Yeah, but Wall of Forgotten Pharaohs' ability, I think, was much better. Like, the fact that it could tap to deal damage was, it was like a win condition for control decks. This is not.
I agree, it's not. But I do think it could slow the speed of the format down. Like, it's defensive speed, right, for a control deck?
For sure, and there's not Exert in this format, so it makes the 0/4 much better, I think. Yeah, so there is some treasures floating around, but again, it's not a ton. It doesn't feel like it was as much as in Ixalan, which of course was, I mean, we're talking about, well, it's not as much as in Ixalan, and Ixalan was a bigger set, but it does feel like a lot of the stuff was toned down to make way for City's Blessing and Ascend shenanigans.
Yeah, and then just to take a quick look at flyers, I think flyers are going to be very, very good in the format, and I think you think that as well.
Yeah.
There's 11 total creatures with flying out of 83 creatures, 3 in white, 4 in blue, 3 in black, and then there's the blue-white gold card is flying, and then green has got Plummet to interact with flyers, and there are no cards with reach in the format.
Yeah, that's huge. The fact that there's no Atskin Archer, there's no Grazing Whiptail, like, I think flying is going to be the name of the game in this format.
Yeah, it's going to be really strong. And I think those other cards with reach are going to, by extension, go up in value in the Ixalan pack if you're in green.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think so. So what does all of this make you think about the Lords of Limited biggest innovation, the beard strategy? Do we think that this is a beard format or not?
It's going to be really interesting. And I think that's one of the first things we're going to report back on to you after jamming some drafts. My initial inclination is like, yes, like the signs that point toward it being beard are like the low power level of the creatures, right? The average power and toughness being a 2/2, like there being no mana sinks. Those two things definitely point towards it being beard, right?
Yes.
But I think the saving grace for the format might be the removal being a whole converted mana cost cheaper. And there's going to be a lot more removal because there's two packs of this and it's a small set. Mm-hmm. And the removal spells are pretty good.
Yes. And so there are enhancements. There are enhancements at common and uncommon that I think are all varying degrees of like fine to quite good. But they don't give a big power and toughness boost like we're used to. So we're not getting our +2/+2s. Because I think that was one of the things that the fact that in Ixalan, you were getting these One with the Wind, Swashbucklings, and Mark of the Vampires that were buffing things to power and to toughness versus a bunch of clunky removal that it like often outclassed. It was like, well, it's out of range of Vanquish the Weak and, oh, it's out of range of Unfriendly Fire. Like a lot of this removal doesn't have that problem. And a lot of these enhancements in Rivals of Ixalan don't give that big of a boost. So I think my initial takeaway is, yes, it is a beard format, but I am also sort of like, well, I wouldn't be surprised if this removal just matches up too well against how small of a buff you're getting from the equipment or the auras.
I think another thing to keep in mind is that there's only one pack of dive downs.
Yeah.
Like, so it's going to be like, that was also a reason the One with the Wind strategy was great, was because you could just jam One with the Winds and dive downs and be certain you weren't going to get blown out.
But there's Negate, which is one in a blue instant counter target non-creature spell, which is worse, but does a very, very similar thing.
Yeah, I didn't even really think about that. That's a very, very good point.
Yeah. I think Negate is the dive down of this set, probably.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that at all. I think I listed that as a sideboard in our grades. Maybe that's going to be main deckable.
All right. Are you ready to look at our grading differences?
Yeah, let's take a look at our grading differences. So we're going to dive into some cards here and actually give you the text instead of just talking about them in generic nebulous terms like we did for our stats.
So the first card that I want to look at here, which I think I'm just going to have to downgrade because I think I'm just wrong about this. It's Sanguine Glorifier, 3 and a white for a 3/3 vampire cleric. When it enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on another target vampire you control. And for some reason, I gave this a C. And you gave it a D+, and that's probably right. I mean, it's not really like build around status, but it's like, it's only going in a black white vampire deck, right?
And even then I don't think it's going to be particularly exciting there. Like a +1/+1 counter is not great on a 1/1 lifelinker or something. It's pretty exciting on a Bishop Soldier, I guess, but.
Yeah, I mean, but let's think about this in terms of the stats, baby.
It's 4 mana for a 4/4, yeah.
Yeah,
4/4 that's worth of stats.
It's a 4-mana 3/3, so a 3/3 is, like, bigger than half the things, and then it can make something else, like, make a 2/2 bigger than half the things. I think in a vampire deck, this is, like, a C-minus.
I'll give you C-.
All right, he's gonna give me C-. What's next?
Next up, we've got Snubhorn Sentry. This is a tricky one to evaluate. Single white for an 0/3 dinosaur with Ascend. So if you have 10 or more permanents, you get the City's Blessing, blah, 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 blah. And when you have the City's Blessing, it gets +3/+0. So once you get to 10 permanents, when this is on the battlefield, it's 1 mana for a 3/3 in the late game, and ostensibly early in the game, it blocks for you.
Yeah, I think this card is atrocious.
I don't think it's great, but I do think it's tricky to evaluate. I had to pause here when I was like trying to put a letter grade on this one.
Yeah, I just feel like, does a deck that's trying to get the City's Blessing, I mean, maybe I'm thinking about Ascend, like, is Ascend just like an incidental thing that every deck is going to be looking to get when you have cards with Ascend? Or is Ascend a strategy? Do you have any opinions about that? Do you think, like, I feel like it's a strategy and not something that I just want, like, to be hoping to get sometimes in a deck.
Yeah, I think it's more of a strategy for blue and black. Like, I'm not particularly excited about it in white. I am excited to, like, make an Ascend a deck in blue-black.
Exactly, yeah. I just don't think this has a home because a 1-mana 0/3, like, what was it, Khinjali's Collar in the last format, was so bad. Like, it was, like, fine sometimes for the ramping effect, but even then you weren't super happy about it, in my experience. And this, I just think, like, by the time it's a 3/3, who cares?
Yeah, and you might have had to chump block with it before then anyway, if you're under a lot of pressure. It does block 2/2s, which there are a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a card to keep an eye on, but I also don't think it's great. I gave it a D.
All right, so the next one, very, very interesting, because I had to talk with chat about this card is Sun Sentinel. 1W for a 2/2 human soldier with vigilance. So I gave this a D+.
I gave this a C.
Okay, so here's my question for you, Ben.
Uh-huh.
How do you compare this to Queen's Bay Soldier?
Slightly better, except it doesn't have a relevant creature type, which is a very real knock against it, I think.
Yeah, I think it's worse than Queen's Bay Soldier.
Really? Just because it doesn't say vampire on it.
Yeah, and vigilance on a 2/2 I don't think is really that relevant. Like, maybe if it gets suited up, sure, we can be talking about some stuff. But I just think it's like kind of worse than Queen's Bay Soldier. And I think Queen's Bay Soldier was probably a C-D+. Like, maybe it made, like, you were wheeling that card. You weren't super happy about taking it before, like, 9th pick.
No, I'm not excited about this card at all. I probably should have given it a C-. I'd be willing to go down to D+. I'm not excited about it at all. I think it's exactly fine. Like, you could play it, you could cut it.
Totally. I totally agree. All right, moving on to the uncommons. This was an interesting card as well. Baffling End, 1W for an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, exile target creature an opponent controls with converted mana cost 3 or less. And when it leaves the battlefield, target opponent creates a 3/3 green dinosaur creature token with trample.
Yeah, I'm not as excited about this card as you are. I gave it a C+.
Yeah, I mean, we are not far away. I gave it a B-. So here is why I think it's very good.
Okay.
Here's why this, I think, is a pull into white. So one, we talked about this is going to hit a lot of creatures in the format.
Yeah, it hits the average creature in the format. The average converted mana cost is 3.
Yeah, and it doesn't, unlike things like Vanquish the Weak, it doesn't get punished by creatures getting buffed, right? It only cares about the CMC of the creature. It doesn't care about the power toughness of the creature. Now, I do agree, or I do think that if they do find an answer for Baffling End, you're giving them a creature that's probably better than the thing you exiled.
Yeah, it's bad news.
The 3/3 green dinosaur token with trample is going to be better than whatever you exiled. I just don't think this is going to get got a lot of the time, at least in game one.
Well, but there's a lot of stuff that, like, bounces permanence, right, in blue?
A lot of stuff. There's a common that bounces permanence in blue.
There's Crushing Top. No, that's creature.
Yeah, I think there's just it's the one in a blue, bounce a thing.
Expel from Roska.
There we go.
It's an uncommon. 1W for an instant. It's got Ascend, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. If you have the City's Blessing, you may put that permanent on top of its owner's library instead. So that punishes this pretty hard. It's an uncommon.
Wait, no, it doesn't punish it. You just replay it and exile the token. Like, you're not getting punished.
I guess, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, you could get blown out, I guess, in combat, like you attack, and then they bounce this, and they have a 3/3 to block, but...
Yeah, and Demystify and Slice and Twain are pretty scary from Ixalan, but probably in general, this is going to be good.
Yeah, I think this is good removal. I think this is in B range. I think I stand by my B- grade.
All right, great. I stand by my C+. See where it shakes out. All right, moving on. Forerunner of the Legion is next. We've got a big gap here.
Yeah.
I'm hoping I can talk you up.
I think you can.
2W for a 2/2 Vampire Knight. When Forerunner of the Legion enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a vampire card, reveal it, then shuffle your library and put that card on top of it. Whenever another vampire enters the battlefield under your control, target creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. And there's kind of a whole cycle of cards like this for each tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Like uncommons let you search up like a dinosaur or a merfolk or whatever and put it on top of your library. So where are we at on this one?
All right. So I gave this like a C-.
And I gave it a build around B-. I think this card's going to be very, very good in the Vampires deck.
So why do you think that?
I think that because Anointed Deacons, like the card that makes the Vampire decks tick, and I think mm-hmm. that's still probably going to be true, and you only get one pack of Deacons now. So having Forerunner from the Rivals of Ixalan pack, being able to search up your Deacon and put it on top, even though it's not card advantage, like all you ever want to draw when you're playing Vampires is Anointed Deacon. So essentially getting a second copy of it out of Rivals of Ixalan is going to be big game, I think.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I didn't really think about it like that. Yeah, I was just really hung up on the fact that this is so good with tokens, but like we're not really getting many packs of tokens. But even if you get a couple Queen's Commission, this card is great also. I mean, you don't get to search it up, but the fact that you get double trigger, right? Because it's when a vampire enters the battlefield under your control, not when it is cast. You also could grab like a Paladin of the Bloodstain to get that double action. You can also tutor this. Like if you have two of these, you can go find that and then like chain them together. This card is like probably a lot better than I thought it was. I can get down with build around B-.
I don't even care about the second line of text so much. I just like looking at it as another copy of an Anointed Deacon just seems great to me. And then the second line of text is still very good. Maybe it's better than a build around B-.
Or you can search up your first copy of Legion Conquistador.
Yeah.
And then go draw the other three that you have. Because Legion Conquistador is back, baby. It's back in this set, which I think is great. You're going to get Legion Conquistador more than you did in Triple Ixalan because this is a small set.
I didn't even think about that. It's going to go up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. It's going to be great now.
Yeah, Legion Conquistador is going to be good. And if you're the only person at the table who wants them, it's going to be sweet. You're going to have a lot of those.
Well, it's going to trade with everything because the creatures are even smaller in this set too. Wow.
Yeah. All right, I'm up on Forerunner of the Legion. Next up, we've got Imperial Ceratops, 4W for a 3/5 dino with Enrage. When it's dealt damage, you gain 2 life.
I think we're probably going to have to agree to disagree on this one.
Okay.
I gave this a C.
Yeah, I gave this a D. I don't care about this card.
I think this card's good. It totally brick walls what your opponent is doing when it comes down on the battlefield, like on the ground. You're still vulnerable in the air, I suppose, but like if they're attacking into this, you're gaining 2 life. Like if they're chump attacking into it, heaven forbid, this is large.
Yeah, you might be right. Like I just need to see it in play and then I'll like start groaning. I just think it's a little too slow and a little off theme of what white is trying to do.
Is it? It's Shuhai Nakamura that loves like the is three of them. Pure Bloods was the original, yeah. Right? The 3/5.
Yeah.
This is that with, I think, very good upside.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't. Whatever. We'll see. I think this. I will probably join you in the C range, but this is not what I'm like looking to do in white
initially.
Yeah. What's next?
Next up, we've got Majestic Heliopterus.
Nice.
This is 3W for a 2/2 dinosaur with flying, and when it attacks another target dinosaur creature you control, gains flying until end of turn. So, like, Aerial Guide that costs 1 more mana.
And is worse, it only targets dinos.
Yeah, and only targets dinos. I'm not thrilled about this card. I gave it a C.
I think I should probably go, like, build... I give it a B minus. It's probably, like, build around B minus, because it really only goes, I think, in, like, a dinosaur deck. But if you're white, red, or white, green dinos, I think this is going to... flying, I think, is the name of the game, and giving a big thing flying, like a big dino flying, is very strong, I think.
Interesting. I just think this card's too clunky to really perform, because, like, think how bad... Like, if you're getting beaten down, and you were under pressure in Hour of Devastation, do you remember how bad of a blocker Aerial Guide was?
Yes.
You just could never block with it, and this is a whole mana more in a format full of aggressive 2/2s. I just think it's going to be too big of a downside to really get over the hump.
Yeah, that might be right. I didn't think about it quite like Aerial Guide was in a slower format, and it was like I felt bad about it being a bad blocker, and this is a mana more expensive, and its ability. Yeah, maybe it's wrong. I think maybe it's like a build around C. I don't know. I think this is going to be a problem if you're
it's powerful.
Like, I think it's very powerful. I don't know. I'm going to stick with build around B minus, but. Could see that this is pretty bad.
All right, what do we got next?
Next up, we got Pride of Conquerors, 1W for an instant with Ascend. Creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn, but if you have the City's Blessing, they get +2/+2 until end of turn instead.
Yeah, I give this a C minus.
I think that because the go wide strategy in white got worse with Rivals, I think this card is not very exciting. Like, how often did you play Rallying Roar?
Yeah, I liked Rallying Roar. I don't know. I like
that
kind of
effect.
But
you didn't take it highly. You like, I think.
No, I just think this card's fine. I give it a C minus. I mean, I'm not over the moon about it, but I think it's playable. I think it's a fine combat trick. I think there's 2-for-1 potential there.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, everything is a pretty flat power level, so maybe just +1/+1 is going to be able to get them enough of the time. But I don't know. I'm under the moon and I am giving it a D.
Yeah. Next up, we've got Sky Marcher Aspirant, 1W for a 2/1 Vampire Soldier with Ascend, and it's got flying as long as you have the City's Blessing. So 10 or more permanents, and it's got flying. So playable one drop.
Yeah, it's fine. I probably should just give it like a D plus. But this is like, I don't know, how much better is this than the 2-mana 2/2 with Vigilance?
Not a lot. I gave it a C again. Probably made the same mistake. Like, we should have been D plus C minus.
Yeah, D plus C minus, I think. We can meet in the middle. Sweet. Okay, so that white was our most contentious color, so we'll be going over fewer cards in the future, but let's go ahead and rank those commons, baby. For number 3, I had Luminous Bonds, which is the pacifism, 2W for the aura, enchanted creature can't attack or block.
For my number 3, I've got Exultant Sky Marcher, 1W for a 2/3 vampire soldier with flying.
I have Exultant Sky Marcher as my number 2 common in white.
Yeah, so the pacifism didn't crack my top 3 commons. My number 2 is Martyr of Dusk. That's 1W for the 2/1 vampire soldier, and when it dies, you create a 1/1 vampire with a lifelink.
Yeah, this card's very strong. Here's my question for you about Martyr of Dusk. Is it better or worse than Bishop Soldier, and if so, by how much?
I think it's worse than Bishop Soldier by like a decent margin, but not a lot.
I think so too. Like, yeah, it's nice. Like, it's a card that sort of makes 3/2 worth of stats, and it's probably maybe going to trade with something because it has 2 power, and we've been talking about how this is going to be a format of bears. But just leaving behind a 1/1 isn't super exciting to me. I definitely think this is a very strong card and it's going to be a high pick. And I think I would rank it as number 4 in my commons, but definitely want to see where that shakes out if Martyr of Dusk ends up being better than the Sky Marcher in this format.
Yeah, it looks good to me.
Yeah. At number 1, I went full beard here. I've got the Aura, Squire's Devotion, 2 and a white, enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has lifelink. And when it enters the battlefield, you create a 1/1 white vampire creature token with lifelink.
I also have that at number 1. That card is insane.
Yeah, I just can't believe it. It's the white cartouche, but with lifelink. It's so good.
It's completely busted.
This is the best common aura, I think.
Oh, for sure. And yeah. I think one of the best commons overall.
Yes, I think so too. And it is the card that leads me to believe that Beard is going to be alive and well.
Yeah, no arguments there. That card is bonkers.
At uncommon, we're only going to rank 2 uncommons here in white. I have Baffling End at number 2, which is the 1 and a white enchantment we talked about that exiles something that's 3 CMC or less, and then when it leaves, they get a 3/3 dino token with trample.
In number 2, I've got Everdawn Champion. It's 1 white for a 2/2 human soldier, and it says prevent all combat damage that would be dealt to Everdawn Champion. So if your opponent wants this off the battlefield, they've got to have a removal spell.
A removal spell, yeah. And or bounce spell, I guess, right? Like,
yeah.
This card, I think, is another reason that I think Beard is alive and well, because this wears auras incredibly powerfully, like, just because it's immune in combat. So I gave Everdawn Champion my number 1 nod for uncommons.
Nice. My number 1 is Forerunner of the Legion. So the vampire build around that we talked about, I think just going and getting an Anointed Deacon is going to be insanely powerful. That card looks really, really strong to me.
Yeah, I like it. All right, moving on to blue. We've only got a couple of cards we wanted to discuss where we had contentious grades. None in the common slot. I think we're pretty lined up in how we felt about blue's commons. And I think an overall thought is blue is pretty strong. I think blue is the front runner for me for the best color here.
Yeah, blue looks real, real good.
The first card we wanted to look at was Aquatic Incursion. We talked about this in the mana sinks portion. This is 3 and a blue for the enchantment. It makes 2/1/1 merfolk tokens with hexproof, and it has 3 and a blue. Target merfolk can't be blocked this turn. I gave this like a build around, but a build around D. I'm not very excited about this card. I mean, it just seems very, very slow. Like 4 mana for 2/2 worth of power. Toughness is not good. Hexproof is nice with wearing, you know, equipment or enhancements. And the target merfolk can't be blocked is nice, but it's, again, very, very expensive. I don't think there's time for this in this format.
It's expensive, yeah. I think it's going to boil down to how good the 4 mana for target merfolk can't be blocked this turn is. Because I think that you're not crazy excited about 4 mana for 2/1/1 merfolks with hexproof, but I am excited about the target merfolk can't be blocked this turn. Merfolk wants to push through damage, and this does it in a big way.
Yeah, except, like, there's not big merfolk, so it's like 4 mana... deal 3 damage, maybe?
Well, but Merfolk, you're trying to make one big threat, right? It's kind of a Voltron type thing. You're trying to put a 1 with the wind on. You're trying to land a River Herald's Boon. And then this leaves around, when you cast this, it leaves behind 2 chump blockers that, like, lets you spend your turns, like, using 4 mana to make something that with 3 or 4 power unblockable.
That's fair. What do we got to take a look at next?
Next up, we've got Flood of Recollection. This is blue-blue for a sorcery. Return target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. Exile Flood of Recollection.
Isn't this just like a standard card, like a constructed card?
I don't know. Like, if you've got a removal-heavy deck, having a second copy of your best removal spell could be okay.
I'm so surprised that you like this, but I had to, like, try and convince you that Regrowth is good in Cube.
Yeah, well, you convinced me, and now I'm a little more on board the train.
Yeah, I just, like, how many good instants and sorceries do you need in your deck before this is playable?
A lot. It's probably in the D range. You're right. I'll go D with you.
All right, great. We're going D. Last card we wanted to look at was Slippery Scoundrel, 2 and a blue for a 2/2 human pirate with Ascend. And as long as you have the City's Blessing, it has hexproof and can't be blocked. I like this card. I gave it a C+.
I'm not thrilled about it. I gave it a C-. 3 mana 2/2 is not where I want to be, because if you're behind, having to block with your 3 mana 2/2 when your opponent spent 1 or 2 mana on their 2/2 is not good.
Well, they're very rarely spending 1 mana on their 2/2.
I don't know. There's a lot of 1-drops that are, like, playable, I think.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. There's the black common. I was just thinking about the uncommons. Yeah. Okay. That's fair. That's a fair point. But if your blue-black Ascend deck exists, this is going to be great. Like, once it's hexproof and can't be blocked, just slap a whatever Squire's Devotion on there, gain me 3 life a turn.
My argument to that would be that once you've gotten to the point where you've got Ascend, you should have won the game, right? Like, if you've managed to stabilize and have 10 permanents, it doesn't matter what card you use. So, like, having a pure win condition doesn't sound great to me. Like, this falls in the, like, the 3 and a blue for the 3/2 unblockable Merfolk. What was that from Ixalan?
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of the name of it.
Storm Sculptor.
Storm Sculptor, yeah. Like, this falls in the Storm Sculptor category to me, like, where I don't really want that card as my win condition in my control deck. I want cards that help me play defense and are a win condition, maybe.
Yeah, that's fair. Maybe I can go down a little bit on it. I'm just too excited about Hexproof and can't be blocked as a win con for a blue deck. But maybe it won't need it. Blue is, as we will see when we rank our commons, is blisteringly fast.
Yes.
All right, shall we get to the ranking, sir?
Let's do it. I'll start it off.
Yeah.
At number 3, I've got Crashing Tide. 2 and a blue for a sorcery. Crashing Tide has flash as long as you control a merfolk. Return target creature to its owner's hand. Draw a card. This card is going to be Tempo Aggro City.
Yeah, this is gross. Like, even if it didn't have that first line of text, just like sorcery speed, bounce a creature, draw a card is great. And then the fact that sometimes it'll be an instant, it'll just be straight up repulse. 2 and a blue, bounce something, draw a card is just like 1-for-1, 2-for-1 city. It's very, very, very strong. I also had that as my number 3 blue common.
All right, moving on to number 2. I've got Deadeye Rig Hauler. This is 3 and a blue for the 3/2 human pirate, the Manowar pirate. It's got a raid trigger when it enters the battlefield. If you attack with a creature this turn, you may return target creature to its owner's hand.
Yeah. So I think an important distinction is that this, unlike Manowar, which allowed tempo like pre-combat, this can't do it, right? This is not bouncing a blocker out of the way. So hopefully you're just like cracking in with your flyers and evasive threats and then post-combat bouncing this for severe tempo loss for your opponent. But this is just so, so strong, I think.
Yeah, I think if we're wrong about a card, or do you have this as number 2 also?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, I think if we're wrong about a card, I think this is the one we're most likely to be wrong about.
Yes.
Because it does cost 4 mana, and it's got raid, and it is, like, the post-combat thing is very real, but it still is such a powerful effect that even it being post-combat, I think, is still worthwhile. Because blue's got so many evasive threats.
Yep, I think so too. What do you got for number 1?
Number 1, I've got Kitesail Corsair. Speaking of evasive threats, this is 1 and a blue for a 2/1 human pirate, and it's got flying as long as it's attacking.
Yep, I had this as number 1 too. This card is great. This is what Welkin Turn is back. 2 mana, 2/1 flyer. This is like, as flying as long as it's attacking, it's great because that's all it's going to be doing is attacking.
Yep.
Yeah, this is very, very strong. And those 3 cards, just like, I'm like drooling with how like aggressive and tempo based blue is going to be. The value there is just so strong.
Yep.
At uncommon, what do you got?
At uncommon, in 2nd place, I've got Siren Reaver, 3 and a blue for the 3/2 Siren Pirate with a raid trigger. Costs 1 less to cast if you attack with a creature this turn. So 3 mana for a 3/2 flyer if you trigger raid. Just rock, rock, rock solid.
Yep, I also have this as number 2.
And number 1, I've got Silvergill Adept. 1 and a blue for a 2/1 Merfolk Wizard. As an additional cost to cast it, reveal a Merfolk card from your hand or pay 3. And when Silvergill Adept enters the battlefield, draw a card.
I went full beard here, Ben, and I gave top marks to Curious Obsession, which is a single blue for an aura. Enchant creature. When enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. And at the beginning of your end step, if you didn't attack with a creature this turn, sacrifice Curious Obsession.
Card's real good.
Yeah, I think this card is obscenely powerful. It's so cheap. You have control of when you cast this, so you are going to get a card's worth of value when you cast this. Yes, it is dead when you are on the back foot because it's like going to fall off at your end step if you didn't attack with a creature this turn. So if you're not able to attack with a creature effectively, this is a dead draw, essentially. But I think that is outweighed by how incredibly powerful this is, like at parity or when you're behind or when you're ahead.
Yeah, I gave this my honorable mention. I think it's very strong also. So I think the first big question we need to answer for the format is how good are auras? And I think if they're great, like if this really is an enhancement where auras are still good, this card's going to be insane. I was hedging a little bit. I think the removal's a lot better. But you're not, this is good because you're not going to get 2-for-1, right? Because you're going to get your card back.
Right.
When you connect with it the first time. And then if they don't have an answer, you just run away with the game.
Yeah.
It's very strong.
Pop this down on some evasive threat. Hold up negate. GG. I'm excited about this card. All right, moving on to black. Just a couple cards we wanted to talk about here. The first one is Dusk Charger. This is 3 and a black for a 3/3 horse with ascend. And Dusk Charger gets +2/+2 as long as you have the City's Blessing. So if you have ascend, if you have the City's Blessing, it's a 4-mana 5/5.
Do you remember the card Baldivian Horde?
Oh, gosh. What set is that from?
It's from Alliances.
No.
2 red for a 5/5. And when it enters the battlefield, you had to discard a card. And it was like bonkers good. Like, I remember putting my Baldivian Horde like in a plastic sleeve, in a hard case, like and just look at this Dust Charger at common. It's laughable. So yeah, I gave this a C. Where'd you end up on it grade wise?
I gave it a D+, and maybe I should think about it more like build around. Cause I think again, like in the Esper or in the blue, yeah, if there's an Esper Ascend deck, blue black or black white, I think this is a really good card. But I guess you don't, I feel like my reasoning of giving it a D+ is like, you're going to get this card if you're in that deck. I don't think this is going to be a contested common.
No, I agree. I agree it's not a contested common at all. But the other thing I like about it is a 4-mana 3/3, I think, blocks way better than normal, too. Because everything, all the threats are like 2/2s. And granted, a lot of them have evasion and whatnot. But I think a 3/3 matches up fairly well against the format and helps you get to the late game. And then once you get to the late game, it becomes your win condition.
Yeah, that's true. I could see getting higher on this card if it becomes more contested. But for now, I think I'll just stick with... Maybe I'm going to come up to C. I'll give it a C-.
Yeah, C- sounds good to me.
All right. What other card do we want to look at here?
Sadistic Sky Marcher. This is an uncommon. Sadistic Sky Marcher is 2 and a black for a 2/2 vampire soldier. As an additional cost to cast it, reveal a vampire card from your hand or pay 1. So if you don't have a vampire, it costs 4 total. And it's 2/2 for a flying lifelinker.
Yeah, I think this card is really strong, even if without the vampire clause. I think 4 mana for a 2/2 flying lifelink is something you are happy to play in this format.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very good. I gave it a build around B. I think it's a B if you're casting it for 3 and probably like a B- or something if you're casting it for 4. But you do not need to be a vampire deck to put this card in your deck.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's not a build around. So I was telling you that I listened to the Men from Moto podcast. There they sort of did an overview of a handful of cards, and they didn't like this in non-vampire decks. And I was surprised by that because I think it's really strong. Like, it's like one with the Wind and Mark of the Vampire all wrapped in one on one pretty little creature.
Yeah, it's strong.
Yeah, I think this card is going to be a high pick and just like a reason to go into black, which I don't think there are a lot of reasons to go into black.
That's interesting. Yeah, you're lower on black than I am.
Yeah, well, let's look at our common and uncommon rankings here.
Yeah.
So for black, I was struggling. I think the first two slots are pretty easy to come up with. I was struggling for my third common here because black's creatures are not super exciting to me. I landed on Dusk Legion Zealot, which is 1 and a black for a 1/1 vampire soldier. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card and lose a life.
Yeah, that's where I ended up also. It was tough to find a card for slot number 3. I was between Dusk Legion Zealot, the card we just mentioned, and Fathom Fleet Border, which is 2 and a black for a 3/3 orc pirate. When it enters the battlefield, you lose 2 life unless you control another pirate. 3 mana 3/3 strong. So it could be possible that Fathom Fleet Border is better than Dusk Legion Zealot, but I just remember Elvish Visionary being so good. And this has a relevant creature type also. Yes, you lose a life. I don't think that's going to be that relevant because vampires have life gain. So I think vampires are going to be very interested in a 2-mana 1/1 that like cantrips.
And also a cantripping permanent is good for ascend. And this is in like the color that wants to be ascending.
Yeah, I think I like this at number 3. And I think the question is going to be how good is it? Like how game impacting is it? Is it just going to be like, you got a little bit of value? Or is it actually going to end up being a good card?
Number 2, I voted down the clunky removal spell. Impale got my number 2 slot. That's 2 black for the sorcery. Destroy target creature.
I joined you there with that on number 2.
And then Moment of Craving. This is a card I think is going to be a powerhouse. 1 and a black for the instant. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. You gain 2 life.
Yeah, the card's going to be great. I have that number 1 pretty easily also.
For the uncommons here, my second uncommon, I had my boy Sadistic Sky Marcher, the lifelinking flying vampire.
I did not, that did not crack my uncommon rankings, and I'm probably wrong about that. I don't know. We'll see.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right.
I really love this other card that I've got at number two. I've got Golden Demise. That's one black for the -2/-2 wrath that we talked about earlier. And then if you've got Ascend, it's a one-sided wrath. So all your opponent's creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. I really have a strong feeling that this is going to spawn a control archetype and is going to be a very high pick and a reason to go into that control archetype.
Yeah, for sure. And then no contest for number one, the best uncommon in the set by a wide, wide margin. Ravenous Chupacabra, 2BB, 2/2, Beast Horror. When it enters the battlefield, destroy target creature and opponent controls.
Necrotal is back.
Oh my god, Necrotal, it's better than Necrotal. This costs the same as the removal spell. Like, it's just the removal spell we just talked about, a common, with a 2/2 attached to it.
Yeah, it's insanely good. I give this like an A- or something.
And I have black pegged as a pretty weak color based on its commons, and I think this is a strong reason to go into it, and then you just like go all in on like trying to value out Ravenous Chupacabra. You draft Recovers highly, that's the 2BB like Raise Dead effect, draw card. You get some of those Siren's Ruses from the last pack. Like, I think you're going to really be wanting to value people out with your Chupacabra.
Yeah, I'm less down on black than you are. I think it's fine. I think black's going to be good. And I'm excited about black as a control color.
I hope you're right, man. I hope there is this like blue-black Ascend deck. That'll be super fun.
Moving on to red. Cards we need to check out. The first one here is Buccaneer's Bravado. This is going to be an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Buccaneer's Bravado is 1R for an instant. You have two options. Choose one. Target creature gets +1/+1 and gains first strike until end of turn. Or target pirate gets +1/+1 and gains double strike until end of turn.
Yeah, so I'm higher on this card than you. I gave it a C+.
And I gave it a C-.
So I think I got to talk you up here, right? I think this is like kind of like an enhancement. It just harkens back the second mode, certainly. So maybe I should think about it more like a build around, because I'm very excited about the second mode. Target pirate gets +1/+1 and gains double strike until end of turn. This is going to be so annoying to have your opponent cast on an unblocked creature, especially in an aggressive deck. It's looking a lot like red is trying to be pretty aggressive with pirates in a red black build, especially, or red blue. I think, like, you think back to like, what was it, Team or Battle Rage, which gave a sort of similar effect, right? Wasn't that +1/+1 and double strike to a creature? Yeah. That card was a house in the format it was in. And yeah, this is a little narrower, so maybe you need to think about it like a build around, but in a pirate deck, I think this is a really high pick.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about it, and especially if you've got an evasive pirate wearing a pirate's cutlass, heaven forbid.
Oh god.
I think you're probably right. I'll join you in C+.
Yeah, sweet. We got him. Next up, we wanted to take a look at Orozca Raptor. This is 2RR for a 3/4 dinosaur with flavor text. No reach to be found on our 4-mana 3/4 dinosaur this time around. So I'm a full letter grade higher than you on this card. I gave it a C.
I gave it a D, and I stand by that. This looks horror bad to me.
No, this is bigger than like everything in the format. This is such good, like, this is a good vanilla creature. This is a big boy. This is going to come down and brick wall some stuff.
Yeah, I'm just not convinced. You're going to tap out for this creature, and then they're going to play a combat trick. It's going to block. They're going to play a combat trick on their 2/2, and that's going to be the end of a Orozca Raptor, and you're going to be tempoed out. I don't think this card's great. I could be convinced to come up to D+, but that's about it.
That's fair. I'm like, you gave like the 2/2 Vigilance for 2, a C or whatever, and you're so mad about a 4-mana 3/4? It's so big.
I like that 2-mana 2/2 way more than I like this card.
All right. I mean, I think this is like kind of off theme for red, but I think this is going to be just fine.
All right. Next up, we've got Needletooth Raptor.
Oh my god, I love this card.
Yeah. Needletooth Raptor is 3R for a 2/2 dinosaur. It's got the Enrage trigger. We talked about this earlier. When it's dealt damage, it deals 5 damage to target creature and opponent controls. You gave this a B+, I gave it a B-.
So, I probably don't need to, like, you know why this card is good, right? Like, I don't need to, like, talk you up on it. I just think, like, at worst, this is going to 1-for-1 with something, right? At worst, it's a 1-for-1 for something. Like, you have to like chump block something and then deal 5 damage to a big thing, and then you'll kill that big thing. That's the worst case scenario. Best case scenario is like you do some like Enrage shenanigans. If you ever activate this twice, good god. If you are able to trade off with, like, you trade this for an X2 and then deal 5 damage to something else, which doesn't seem that crazy to me. I think this is going to make combat miserable for your opponent when it's on your side of the battlefield. I think it's really, really strong and really tough to play around. Like, yeah, sometimes they just go kill spell, it's gone.
Even then, you 1-for-1 with their removal spell.
Exactly.
That's like the worst case scenario.
And you're and you're like probably mana neutral unless they're like Vanquish the Weaking It or whatever. Like, and even though that's still just one mana less, like, I just think this card is very, very strong.
Yeah, you're going to be jamming Ryles in your deck if you've got Needletooth Raptor.
Oh, yeah.
The Wrath that cantrips is going to go in your deck if you've got Needletooth Raptor. There's a lot of cards in the set that work with this card. I do think it's strong. I'll come up to a B.
Sweet. Next up, we've got Pirate's Pillage. It's 3 red for sorcery as an additional cost to cast it, discard a card, and then you draw 2 cards and create 2 treasure tokens.
Yeah, I gave this a D minus.
Oh, I think this is, it's Tormenting Voice.
Yeah, for 4 mana.
Yeah, but like, so? Like, Tormenting Voice was never a turn two, was not often a turn two play anyway, and you certainly probably don't want it as a turn two play in this format.
I disagree. I think Tormenting Voice was a turn two play because it lets you find, it fixed your hand, right? It lets you, if you were flooded, it lets you pitch a land and draw action. And if you needed lands, it lets you pitch a card and find lands. I disagree. Okay. I think Tormenting Voice is much better than Pirate's Pillage.
All right, that's fair. But this is, I think in this format, you don't have time for that. So if this did cost 2 mana, I think you wouldn't be casting it until later turns anyway. Like, if there's a... I feel like this is only really good if there's, like, a... No, I think it's still fine in, like, red-green dinosaurs. Like, it's good if you want the treasures, too, but red doesn't really want, like, City's Blessing stuff that often, so you'd have to have it paired with, like, black, but I think red-black is going to be aggressive. I don't know. Like, I'm not crazy about this card. I still have it in the D range. I just think, like, one of these as your 23rd card is not, like, the most embarrassing thing.
I don't think I'm ever going to play this card. It's worse than Pirate's Prize.
You are definitely going to cast this card.
We'll see.
You're definitely going to cast this card.
Okay, we'll see.
We'll see.
We will see. I might just never cast it out of spite.
Great. And your win rate will plummet because you're not playing garbage Tormenting Voice. All right, ranking of the top red commons here. I have Swaggering Corsair as my number 3. That's the 2 red, 2/2 human pirate with raid. Gets a +1/+1 counter on it if you attacked with a creature this turn.
Yeah, that didn't crack my top common rankings. I was not crazy excited about that card. It seems a little clunky. It's good if you trigger raid and it's a 3-mana 3/3, but... that's not, like, insane. I went with the beard plan, and I gave Tilinali's Crown the number 3 slot. That's 1 red for an enchantment aura. Enchant creature. When Tilinali's Crown enters the battlefield, it deals 1 damage to enchanted creature. An enchanted creature gets +3/+0 and has trample. So can trigger enrage on your dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put it on an X1 because it will kill it.
But you can put it on your opponent's X1s and kill them.
You could, yeah. Kills X1s on the opponent's side of the battlefield and hits hard. +3/+0 and trample is like a serious stat boost of power. Now, the bummer is that it doesn't boost toughness at all.
Yeah.
Like we talked about with the enhancements a little bit. But I think this is a strong card and it's going to close some games out if your opponent doesn't have removal. There are a lot of evasive 2-drops.
Yeah, I think this card is very good. I was a little less excited about it. Like this would be my number 4 slot. But I was a little less excited about this because of the no boost to toughness. But you put this on an evasive threat. The problem is, putting it on an evasive threat is tough because a lot of evasive threats are small. Like, you can't put this on the 2-mana 2/1 flyer in blue, right? Like, you got to put this on something a little beefier than that.
Yep.
Yeah. I have a different beard strategy for my number 2 slot. I went Buccaneer's Bravado. That's the combat trick we talked about that gives a pirate +2/+2 and double strike until end of turn. Just a creature +1/+1 and first strike until end of turn.
Yeah, I could be convinced that that's number 3. That might be better than Tilinali's Crown, especially after our discussion.
Yeah.
That's interesting. We'll have to keep an eye on that one.
Sure. What'd you have for number 2?
Number 2, I had Goblin Trailblazer. I think this card's going to be rock solid. It's 1 red for a 2/1 Goblin Pirate with Menace. So an evasive 2-drop pirate hits all the boxes you want from your 2-drop.
Yeah, totally. I think that might be the best red creature over Corsair. We'll just have to see like how much just like being a 2-drop is super, super relevant. And then I assume we're in agreement on number 1, Bombard, 2 red for the instant, deal 4 damage to target creature.
Yep.
Yeah, this card's very, very efficient. What'd you have for your red uncommons?
Red uncommons. Number 2, I've got Reckless Rage. This card's interesting. Single red for an instant, it deals 4 damage to target creature you don't control, so Flame Slash there at instant speed. And 2 damage to target creature you do control. So you've got to have like an X3 on your side of the battlefield to not 2-for-1 yourself with this card.
Or you can respond to a removal spell.
You could, yes. Mm-hmm.
I think this card's really interesting and I think a very, very strong card. I had to just go beard here and I gave C red my number 2 slot. 1 red for the enchantment aura, enchant creature. Enchanted creature has +2/+2, +2/+1 and first strike. And at the beginning of your end step, if you didn't attack with a creature this turn, you sacrifice C red.
So I have a question for you. How much better than this, than Tylenol's Crown, the +3/+0 and Trample, do you think this is?
A lot better.
Why?
Because First Strike makes it really hard to block this.
Yeah, like you don't need to have an evasive threat that you're putting it on?
Right. Like, yeah, I just feel like this begs your opponent to double block and get blown out by something, you know? I think it's like it makes combat really tough. I think this might even, in some ways, be better than the blue one that I'm super high on, just because I don't know how they're blocking what you put this on.
Yeah, they're probably not. They probably have to have a removal spell.
Yeah, I think it's really, really good.
It's certainly a strong card, yeah. I would not be surprised if this ends up cracking my top uncommons. Number one, I've got a Needle Tooth Raptor, our 2/2 friend that does 5 damage.
Yep, me too. I'm really excited about that card. All right, moving on to green. We do have a few cards to talk about here, Ben. And you know what the first one is? Your boy, Hunt the Weak. 3 and a green for a sorcery, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control, then that creature fights target creature you don't control.
Yeah, I am super excited about Hunt the Weak. I give this a B+.
You had to sell me on this card. I could be convinced that it's in B- range, maybe, but I just gave it a C+. Like, I think this card's very good, and maybe it's a pull into green, but the flat power level of all the creatures doesn't make me crazy about this.
Well, so here's what I think. I think it's an enhancement and a removal spell rolled into one. Like, you're interested in buffing your creatures in this format. Turning your 2/2 into a 3/3 is going to make it so that your opponent probably has to double block it to kill it in the future. You're taking a creature off their side of the battlefield and making yours into a better threat. Fight spells that have pumped power and toughness historically have been very, very strong. This is green's only removal spell, and I think it's probably, I've got it pegged as the best removal spell in the format.
No way.
What do you think is better than this?
I think the 2 black removal spells are better than this. I think Bombard is better than this.
I disagree that Bombard is better than this, and I could maybe be convinced that the 2-mana -2/-2 gain 2 life is better than this. But I think this card's going to be a house.
But so we are dealing only in common and uncommon territory here, Ben. There's going to be bombs in the format that we have to deal with. So like Hunt the Weak is, I guess it's like, but even the black spell, the Moment of Craving is instant, so you can treat it sort of like a combat trick. Also, this I think is it's expensive. 4 mana is a lot. It's a little clunky. It's only sorcery speed. You have to have something. It has a setup cost. Like, you have to have something that you can profitably fight with. You have to have them tapped out so you're not getting blown out by something. I think there's a lot more going on here. And like, yeah, the like great scenario where like I have a 2/2, you have a 2/2, you're tapped out, we fight, I get to attack for 3, now my creature's bigger, that's great. But I think there's a lot more downside to this card than you're giving it.
Yeah, I'm certainly looking at the best case scenario. Like, I've got a little bit of a case of BCSM here. That's historically mm-hmm. been my weak point as a Magic player.
Yeah.
But I think the upside is huge. This just looks like Savage Stomp to me, and it's only 1 more mana. And Savage Stomp was busted in Ixalan, and I think that type of effect's going to continue to be very good here.
But I think when Savage Stomp, when you had to pay the full mana, I think it was kind of a bummer. And this is
really
one more. I remember feeling a little tempoed out when I had to do that.
I never felt bummed about paying for Savage Stomp at any cost.
But you were playing them almost always in dinosaur decks.
I was, yeah. I was paying 1 mana for it frequently. Yeah, I'm looking at it with rose-colored glasses. It's certainly possible, but I'm gonna start the format out by picking Hunt the Weak very highly.
I could be convinced to pull this up to B-, but I'm gonna stick at C+ here. The next card, Jade Bearer, single green for a 1/1 Merfolk Shaman. When Jade Bearer enters the battlefield, you put a +1/+1 counter on another target Merfolk you control. Have you gone full Ryan Sachs on me? How did you give this a build around C?
I think it's going to be very good in Merfolk. It's 1 mana for 2/2 worth of stats. It's going to leave around a body that you're interested in putting enhancements on at a very little cost. And pushing through your Merfolk, pushing through damage, like turning your 2/2 into a 3/3 and enabling attack, is going to be very strong, I think.
But you can't play it. It's 1/1. You can't play on turn 1.
Yeah, I'm aware. It's going to let you double spell on turn 3, though.
I think this card is very weak. I'm going to stick with D. I'm curious. And if this card is good, then there's just like no hope for Dirtle, I think. Like, if this guy is good, I think we're in trouble with his not being an aggressive format. But I'm going to stick with D.
I don't think it's good. I give it a build around C. I think in a Merfolk deck, this card's going to perform.
Yeah. Last card we want to take a look at. What's that one?
Orozca Frillback. That's 2 and a green for a 4/2 dinosaur. Stop.
So it's just Frenzied Raptor?
Yeah. And I thought Frenzied Raptor was fine. I gave this a C.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of like fine as like, I don't know. I was never really excited about Frenzied Raptor in any of the decks. Like it made the cut when I was playing like white-red. It made the cut when I was playing red-green, maybe. But I was never really taking it super highly. So I just gave it a D+.
It's probably C minus D plus. I think, thinking of that, I fell in love with the Tillinolly's Night Thrash of Raptors bookending Frenzied Raptors. So I think this is probably going to be less good because there's less Tillinolly's Knights and Thrash of Raptors floating around.
Right. Like, what are the, like, you have a dinosaur in play payoffs and they don't seem pretty high.
Yeah. No, there are not a lot.
A couple uncommons to take a look at. Cherished Hatchling. This card is weird. One and a green for a 2/1 dino. When it dies, you may cast dinosaur spells this turn as though they had flash. And whenever you cast a dinosaur spell this turn, it gains. When this creature enters the battlefield, you may have it fight another target creature.
I give this a build around B minus.
So this card, I think, is basically just a 2-mana 2/1.
Why do you say that?
So this dying is most often, I think, going to be at the whim of your opponent, in which case, like, they are sort of in control of when this dies, so that if you attack with it, I guess it could sort of be have sort of unblockable on it because your opponent doesn't want to get blown out by your second main phase dinosaur. But I think it's going to be really hard for you to be able to kill this with some sort of enraged trigger or like a Ryle effect or something like that, and then get the bonus. And I think this is going to make people misplay a lot, like maybe not you or me, but I think people are going to get kind of cute and like not cast their dinosaur on their turn and hope and just like pass with mana up and hope to be able to like block and flash in. I think this is just, there's a lot going on here, and it mostly just reads 2-mana 2/1.
You actually convinced me. I think your opponent having control over when this dying makes it significantly worse than I had in my brain. So I'm gonna join you at C.
All right. What's next?
Next up, we've got the card I'm most likely to be wrong about, I think. I've had a trend of loving these cards. I gotta keep being their champion. Eventually I'm gonna be right. Strength of the Pack. This is 4 green-green for a sorcery. Put 2+1/+1 counters on each creature you control. This is our biggest gap of the whole set.
Yeah.
I gave this a B minus.
I gave this a D plus.
Okay, so let me try to tell you why I think it's good. So it's similar to an Overrun effect, right? Overrun was traditionally a good card, and the bonus sticks around. Now, it doesn't give trample, but it's probably going to force some chump blocks. And Merfolk, I think, does really want to go wide. In this format, there's a lot of 1/1 hexproof Merfolk tokens running around various places. And if you've got like 3 creatures in play, this is very good. 6 mana for 6+1/+1 counters is strong, I think. Now, granted, there are going to be times when this does nothing, which is probably why I'm too high on it. I think the truth about this card is probably going to be somewhere in the middle, and it's going to settle more in the C range.
Yeah, I think what you said is correct about it being basically a Merfolk card. Like, I think it's interesting that dinosaurs are in the art, but I think Merfolk is the tribe that seems to be going wide, at least in Rivals of Ixalan. And so if you do have a number of little hexproof wieners hanging around, then suiting them up with 2 counters is going to be great. But like, remember how high we were on Overcome in Hour of Devastation and how bad that card was?
But it would have been good if it was counters.
I don't know. I mean, it would have been better. It would have been better, but I don't know if it would have been good. Yeah, maybe it's just a C, but I think I'm going to lose to this card probably, but I don't know if that's going to, I don't know how often that's going to have to happen for me to be convinced that it's good.
I'm going
to
go C plus on it.
It's so expensive too. It's a whole mana more than Overcome.
It is expensive, yeah, but it's strong. It's a good effect if you're, but it's kind of a little win more. I don't know. C, C plus, somewhere around there. It's tough to evaluate.
Tough to evaluate, for sure.
Certainly very powerful in certain situations and terrible in others.
Yeah. All right, our last contentious card here is Thunder Herd Migration. 1 and a green for a sorcery. Search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. But this is that cycle of cards where you have to reveal a dinosaur card from your hand when you cast it, or pay 1. So if you reveal a dinosaur, it's straight up rampant growth. If not, it's a 3-mana rampant growth.
Yeah, I give this a build around C plus. I don't think you're putting this in a deck that doesn't have a high dinosaur count, but I think in a deck with a high dinosaur count, it's going to be good.
Yeah, that's probably right. I just gave it a C minus, but it really probably does have a build around grade. You're only playing this in a deck where you can reliably cast it for 2, hopefully. So I think that's right. Build around C plus sounds good to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make me want to play dinosaurs, but if I'm in a dinosaur deck, will be a welcome addition to my deck.
Yeah, for sure. All right, last color rankings here. Well, I'm sorry, Ben. I put Hunt the Weak at number 3.
Oof, that hurts my heart.
I'm probably wrong.
At number 3, I've got Guiltgrove Stalker. This is 1 and a green for a 2/1 Merfolk Warrior, and it can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less.
Yeah, I am very excited about that card, as we will see from my rankings. Number 2, I had Jungleborn Pioneer. This card seems sweet to me. 2 and a green for a 2/2 Merfolk Scout. When it enters the battlefield, you create a 1/1 blue Merfolk token with hexproof. So 3 mana for 3 power and toughness worth of stats.
Yeah, no drawbacks or funny shenanigans like the red and the black 3-drop had. Just straight up
like, and it's spread across two bodies, which I think is going to be better than not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then number one, I've got Hunt the Weak. You're number three. And at number one, you've got...
I've got Guildgrove Stalker. Yeah. Guildgrove Stalker seems like one of the crazy good attackers we've got in the format. So the 2-mana 2/1, it can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. So that means, like, probably for the first few turns, it's just unblockable. And then by the time you suit it up with something, it has to be blocked. Like, it can't be double blocked, right? Like, you're not getting blown out by them, like, jamming a bunch of blockers in front of it, because they're probably only going to have, like, one thing, in which case, like, you suited it up, maybe then you get to blow them out with a combat trick. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking way too best case scenario for this card, like you are with Hunt the Weak, but this seems really grown testy to me.
Yeah, it's going to be strong. Like, this getting enhanced is very, very good.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it can't be blocked by half the things, right?
Yeah, over half the creatures, yeah.
Should be good. All right, for uncommons, I think we're in agreement here. I had Swift Warden as my number two. That's one green for a 3/3 Merfolk Warrior with Flash. And when it enters the battlefield, target Merfolk you control gains Hexproof until end of turn.
Yep, I also have that at number two.
Card is very, very tricksy. What do you have for number one?
Number one, this card is bonkers. Crested Herdcaller, 3 green for a 3/3 dinosaur with trample. And when it enters the battlefield, create a 3/3 green dinosaur creature token with trample. So 2 3/3 trample bodies for 5 mana. That is absurd.
This is absurd. Like, why did they decide that Registrar Alpha needed to be one color and at uncommon?
Yeah, I have no idea.
It's just 1/1 less than red. And it itself has trample. Registrar Alpha didn't have trample itself. Oh, man. Yeah, card is busted good. All right, any overall thoughts that we haven't touched on here before we wrap things up?
I would like to take a look at a colorless card that we haven't really talked about yet.
Oh, great.
We differed here quite a bit. This is Strider Harness.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is an equipment, costs 3 mana, and it gives equipped creature +1/+1 in haste, and it's got equip 1. So I think this is going to be close to as strong as Pirate's Cutlass in the new format. I give this a B-. Where did you end up on it?
I gave it a C, but I was like, this also might be due to the fact that I was doing my set review on stream, because I was having to, like, defend this card heavily to chat. I was like, oh, no, really? This is good. This is going to be good. So maybe that's why I landed on C.
Yeah, I think for the same reasons that Pirate's Cutlass was good, this is going to be good. It's one less power, but I don't think Pirate's Cutlass was insane because it gave 2 power. It was insane because it was a place to put your mana, and it made your, like, vanilla creature into something relevant. So turning a 2/2 into a 3/3 in this format probably means it's going to have to be double blocked. So I think it's going to enable attacks for your 2/2s that otherwise wouldn't have attacks. And, like, giving haste in the late game, there are no mana sinks in the format, as we discussed earlier in the stats section. There are 3 mana sinks. So being able to pay 1 to make something better and potentially give a top deck haste, your opponent's going to have to respect this card on defense, because they're never going to know when you're going to have a creature right. that you're going to give haste to. Like, so threat of activation is real. And I think just +1/+1 matters in the format. And I think you're probably going to be able to afford to spend 3 mana to play this equipment. I think it's going to be really strong, and I think it's going to be close to as good as Pirate's Cutlass was.
Yeah, great. I agree with everything you're saying. I'm happy to give this a B-.
Yeah, it just looks... So if we're going to be right, if the format's similar to Ixalan, and if it's not, we'll probably be wrong. But based on the stats we compiled, the format's looking similar to Ixalan, with the exception of the removal being cheaper and more efficient and more prevalent, I think.
But this doesn't make me that scared about that.
No, not at all. That's why I think this is especially good, because it's a way to enhance your stuff that you're not getting blown out by removal.
Absolutely. Oh boy. So that's it, huh?
That's it. Yeah. All the commons and uncommons.
All right. Well, I feel super prepared to hop into those pre-release queues on Magic Online on Thursday and maybe go to an IRL pre-release this weekend. I definitely just am jonesing to draft it rather than do sealed, because I don't feel like... I feel like we're only thinking about these cards in the context of draft. So it'll be interesting to see if sealed is, like, markedly slower or not. Because one of the things we actually didn't talk about was how prevalent fixing is in the format, right? Like, there's Evolving Wilds at Common and Traveler's Amulet at Common, which are, like, colorless fixers that allow you to go search up basic lands from your deck.
Yeah.
But I just felt like none of that was sort of relevant to talk about, because it didn't feel like, I don't know, multicolored good stuff is going to get there. Unless you get some busted rares, which you will in sealed. So, well, we'll definitely see what shakes out in terms of the difference between draft and sealed is.
Yeah, for sure. I am also going to be jamming some of the sealed leagues on Friday. I'm going to be stuck at a music educators conference, so I'm going to be in my hotel room drafting away.
Nice.
For lots of the day.
So next week, what are we looking to do, Ben?
I think we're going to try to dive into the format like as soon as possible. I think we're going to skip the usual rare and mythic rare set review and try to give you nitty gritty info right away about cards that are good in draft and what the format looks like. So I think we're going to try to get a clearer picture of the format, maybe dive into some archetypes, maybe dive into like cards that are good in those archetypes that are excelling based on what we've seen in sealed or things like that.
Yeah, for sure. And this is a pretty big departure from the normal like limited podcast first episode when a set comes out. So we'd love feedback. Anything you liked or didn't like about this episode, we're definitely looking to curate these moving forward and figure out like what is best suited for our listener base.
Yes, absolutely. And want to make it very clear that all of the information that we've got in our spreadsheet here is going to be available for everyone. We will put a link to the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet is decked out. We've got all of our grades for every card in every color, multicolor artifacts, lands. And then we've got removal, all ranked, graded, combat tricks, ranked, graded, list of the combat tricks, our rankings for the top commons and uncommons, the creature, CMC, power and toughness charts, all that stuff available at your fingertips in the spreadsheet. So I think it's going to be super helpful. And if that was too many stats at the beginning of the podcast, you can take your sweet time and look through that spreadsheet to try to get your own picture of what the format's going to look like.
Absolutely. Cube is wrapping up. Sad, 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 but I'm excited to have Rivals come in. But we still have our Vintage Cube Treasure Hunt up and well through January 15th. If you complete all 5 achievements, you get entered into a giveaway for a draft set. You want to win the game with your opponent controlling no permanents, Infinite Loop Time Walk, Mindslaver Lock your opponent, win the game with Sword Count 15 or greater, and turn to Eldrazi.
Yeah, if you get those done, tweet at Lords of Limited and hashtag VC Treasure Hunt them. And if you're not on Twitter, which you need to be because MTG Twitter is great, email us some screenshots at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
If you want to find us directly, you can spam our Twitch chat. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. We are both under those same usernames on Twitter, Lord Tupperware and Mr. Metronome. I also have a YouTube channel where my full discussions of the commons and uncommons from stream are up for Rivals of Ixalan. That's youtube.com/c/LordTupperware.
Yeah, if you've got any feedback about the show or questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music, and thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Yep, thanks everybody. See you later.
Your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.